This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
an estimated 280 million children worldwide are significantly better off today than they were in the year 2000.
That's Carolyn Miles of Save the Children, pointing to gains in the well-being of children globally. Also, the African Continent Free Trade Agreement is in effect, but will it help African economies? And Somali refugees trapped in Yemen are returning home. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, came into effect yesterday, and so far, 24 countries of 54 have ratified it. But as Mohamed Youssef reports for VOA from Nairobi, trade experts say a lack of proper infrastructure and some countries' protectionist laws may hinder the deal.
The plan was signed at the African Union summit in Kigali in 2016 after 4 years of negotiations. Burkina Faso is the latest country to sign the plan, designed to allow free trade across the continent. The agreement aims to facilitate the free movement of goods and people. If successful, experts say it will boost African economies and give the continent a better chance to compete in global trade markets. Charles Kahudu is the head of the East African Chamber of Commerce, Industry and Agriculture. He says African countries trading among themselves will benefit the continent.
Africa Continental Free Trade Area, if we use that framework to increase or boost intra-Africa trade, will mean value addition for our raw materials. Those natural resources that we have abundant of, instead of in fact exporting them to be in raw form, we shall use the demand within the continent to be able to process them in a manner that our own consumers within Africa continent can use.
With imported goods flooding the African market from countries in Asia, mostly China, some African countries have been putting into place mechanisms and laws to protect their farmers and industries. Fred Muhunza teaches economics at the University of Makerere in Kampala.
A lot of our infrastructure is outward looking. We do not have transport infrastructure by way of rails, roads, airports, and air travel that link Africa with Africa for purposes of trade. A lot of our trade is looking beyond Africa, outside Africa.
He also says African countries have been coming up with some measures to block other goods.
We have a number of local laws that are coming in against foreign free trade, which is going to be a detail. We also have standards. Much of Africa doesn't have a common standard. So if a country decides to use a non-tariff measure, they just have to decide and say, well, your standard is not good enough, so you are not going to go through.
30 African countries have yet to sign the continent's trade agreement. Signatories have until July to find ways to make the deal work. Mohamed Youssef for VOA News, Nairobi.
Save the Children's annual global report shows signs of progress in most parts of the world for children. VOA's Salem Solomon reports.
At a time when bad news seems inescapable, the aid group Save the Children has some good news. Across the globe, children are healthier and safer than ever before. According to a new report by the U.S.-based charity, the overall situation for children has improved in 173 of 176 countries since 2000. Among the highlights are 4.4 million fewer child deaths per year, 115 million more children in school, and 11 million fewer married girls. Speaking about the report, CEO of Save the Children, Carolyn Miles, says,
"One of the things we found was that there's been some remarkable progress in helping children to grow up healthy, educated, and safe. And I think the headline from the report is that an estimated 280 million children worldwide are significantly better off today than they were in the year 2000.
In Africa, the group found reason for optimism. More than 70% of African countries saw their scores increase by 100 points or more. Sierra Leone, Rwanda, Ethiopia, and Niger made the greatest gains. Nikki Gillette is one of the report's researchers.
In most of these cases, we think it's strong political commitment from the very top.
Each of the African countries highlighted had specific drivers improving the quality of life for children. In Sierra Leone, the end of a protracted civil war led to a 99% reduction in displaced people. In Rwanda, a return to peace and several government initiatives led to a 79% drop in child mortality and a 60% reduction in child marriage and out-of-school rates. Miles said 20 years ago in Ethiopia, Save the Children was primarily focused on saving the lives of young children. Now, the problems are less severe. The group can focus on other indicators.
You know, the government has taken up a lot of that community health work, and the child mortality rate has dropped by 54%, I think, in Ethiopia. So the work that Save the Children is doing there now is more focused on making sure that kids get basic literacy and have all the skills they need in school, and also training youth.
But the news wasn't good everywhere. Syria, Venezuela, and Trinidad and Tobago scores dropped between 2000 and 2009. The report also noted a steep rise in the number of children living in conflict zones. Since 2000, the number of people forced to flee their homes due to conflict has increased by 80%, totaling about 30.5 million more people.
That's where we see really the indicators not going in the right direction.
In fact, Miles added, the five countries recording the worst mortality rates for children under five, the Central African Republic, Chad, Mali, Sierra Leone, and Somalia, are all either at war or have recently come out of war.
We released a report earlier this year, a Stop the War on Children report, that estimates that 420 million children were living in areas affected by conflict at the end of 2017. And this impact on kids is more than just the impact from bombs and bullets, which obviously is killing children in terms of direct effects of conflict. But also we're seeing the huge numbers of children that are impacted by conflict in terms of things like dying from malnutrition.
Salem Solomon for VOA News, Washington, D.C.
The Italian Navy rescued 100 migrants from the Mediterranean Sea yesterday, while 178 others were taken to the Italian island of Lampedusa and to Malta. The Navy said the lives of the migrants were in danger because the boat's engine failed and only a few had life jackets. The migrants had sent an alarm signal and said a 5-year-old girl had died on the boat, but the Navy reported no deaths. In a related development, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees airlifted 149 migrants from Libya to Rome. The group included 65 children and 13 babies. The migrants had been trapped by fighting near the Libyan capital, Tripoli. Many were suffering from malnutrition and needed medical care. The Italian Interior Ministry notes that about 1,561 migrants have landed in Italy so far this year, compared to 13,430 during the same period in 2018. A boatload of 125 Somali refugees fleeing insecurity in Yemen arrived in the Somali port of Berbera Thursday. The voyage was organized by the UN Refugee Agency and partners in cooperation with authorities in Yemen and Somalia. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
This is the 33rd departure of Somali refugees from Yemen since the UN Refugee Agency and humanitarian partners began the so-called Assisted Spontaneous Return Program in 2017. To date, nearly 4,300 Somali refugees have returned home. Yemen is still hosting 250,000 Somali refugees who fled there to escape conflict and drought in their country. The security they once found in Yemen has vanished. 4 years of civil war in Yemen has turned that country into what the United Nations calls the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Refugees are feeling increasingly insecure and fearful for their lives as conditions in Yemen deteriorate. UN refugee spokesman Baba Balar says many refugees face hardship and lack access to basic services. He tells VOA they feel insecure and want to leave.
With the conflict going on in Yemen, refugees have been targeted. We just recently, last week, announced civilian casualties, including refugees. Life is becoming tough, and the situation inside Yemen is worsening. Many of these refugees are coming forward to be helped return home.
Inside Yemen, Balar says the UNHCR and partners help Somali refugees gather the documents they need and provide transportation and financial support to facilitate their journey home. When they arrive in Somalia, he says the returnees receive assistance to reintegrate into their communities and to help them get started in their new lives. Balar says it is up to the returnees where they want to go. Some go to home villages, others find it too unsafe and go to Mogadishu to see if they can start a new life. He acknowledges that Somalia still has its own problems with conflict, instability, and drought, the factors that drove many Somalis to Yemen in the first place. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Sudan has shut down the offices of international broadcaster Al Jazeera. The Qatari television station said its office was suddenly closed yesterday and its journalists banned from reporting in the country. Al Jazeera bureau director Al-Musulmani Al-Kabashi told the French news agency that the country's military council withdrew the network's license with no reason given. The news operation has regularly reported on Sudanese demonstrations for civilian rule. It is supported by the Qatari government, which has been an ally of ousted President Omar al-Bashir. In a statement, the network called the closure an attack on media freedom and the basic tenets of the right of the people to know what is happening in Sudan. In Khartoum, protesters continue to occupy an area near the military headquarters. They say they will not leave until the military agrees to their main demand. Protest groups and the ruling military council had reached agreement on some details of a political deal, but the sides could not agree on whether the military or civilians should lead the transitional body. The army ousted longtime leader Bashir on April 11th after weeks of protests in the capital. The population of Harare has soared in recent years. Like many growing cities, there is a problem meeting the need for housing. This has resulted in many residents falling victim to land barons who parcel out land that does not belong to them. The Harare City Council has a solution to solve the problems of accommodation and land ownership. Reporter Kudzai Zvinavashi has more details.
The Harare City Council is starting to work on resolving the city's accommodation needs. Edgar Zewonye is the principal housing director for the council.
The Department of Housing is done a Department of Strategic Plan, and in that Department of Strategic Plan, my division has been tasked with the responsibility of providing plus or minus 10,000 residential units by the end of 31st December 2019. So we are working flat out to make sure that we deliver.
In the past, the city council often sold land to housing societies and land developers, but the system was poorly regulated. In many cases, bogus companies then claimed they held title to land and sold it to eager home buyers who later found they had been duped and had lost their money. Zewonya says that will not be the case this time.
We have had a new arrangement in which we are now saying, instead of having housing cooperatives and instead of having self-managed housing pay schemes, we are now managing the pay schemes instead of our to ensure that there's no misappropriation of funds from beneficiaries.
Zewonya says they hope to offer the housing units at the cheapest price possible, since the council will subsidize the labor costs. Harare resident Agnes Ncube says making residential units available is a timely action.
I think it's a welcome move because noting the issue of rural to urban migration and also the fact that most people living in the high density suburbs have a lot of extended family, which would mean more people in the same house. It's a welcome move. I just hope that the process will be transparent and they will not be marred by issues of corruption.
Lauren Mupasiri, the director of the Combined Harare Residents Association, says she hopes that those without homes will be prioritized over those looking to get more property. She says the waiting list at the council for those hoping to buy council land has been growing for years and could have slightly below 1 million names on it. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
Kenya is the fifth largest coffee-producing country in Africa, but that might change. Coffee farmers in the East African nation are turning to other crops because of drought and low prices on the international market. For VOA, Mohamed Yusuf reports from Kiambu, Kenya.
71-year-old Joseph Wainaina started farming coffee a year after Kenya gained independence. As a teenager, he loved to farm, and for years he enjoyed good returns. But recently, global coffee prices kept dropping, and coffee trades became expensive to maintain. I want to cut down coffee trees and forget about it, he says, so that I can continue with other projects like dairy farming, pig farming, and even poultry farming. These days, even chicken makes good returns, Wainaina says. In recent years, more small-scale coffee farmers in Kenya have been uprooting their coffee trees. Those who have a sentimental attachment to coffee and want to continue farming, it must incorporate other crops to make a decent living. Maurice Ikonya is still growing coffee, but to make ends meet for his family, he is forced to grow other crops.
I cannot live off coffee right now. I have to diversify and do other things. And that is how I went into mushroom farming and I went into pumpkin farming to try and diversify the source of income.
Ikonya says he's continuously battling tree diseases and he spends $200 a month to maintain his coffee farm. The prices of coffee on the global market has dropped up to 30 cents a kilo. If they are lucky, farmers get 70 cents per kilogram. Joseph Kea of Kenya's Coffee Task Committee, a body charged with policy formulation in the sector, says they are trying to help farmers increase production and coffee tree yields.
We have also proposed a three-year subsidy program, and again with the intention again of trying to assist the farmer to reduce the production cost. And I think increased production in such a way that we can allow the farmers to break even. And we're talking about increasing productivity from 2 kilos per tree, 2 kilos of cherry per tree to about 8.
The reforms in the coffee sector may have come too late for some farmers. Some, like Wainaina, say only an increase in global prices could convince them to continue producing coffee. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Kiambu, Kenya.
Kenya is facing one of the worst stretches of drought in years, causing underdevelopment, fights over water, and fears of starvation. However, a village in western Kenya is using a high-tech solution to water scarcity with so-called digital wells in a bid to improve local livelihoods and prevent waste. Maggie Juki reports from Nakuru County, Kenya.
In Nakuru County's Salai village, a group of women carry jerrycans to the local well to collect water. Solai villagers have long been dependent on seasonal rivers and salty lakes alike for their animals and irrigation. But drought ravaging much of Kenya has reduced the local river into a stream. Residents like Ancha Sire say the drilling of the so-called digital wells in December has been a lifesaver. Previously, she says, they would have to wake up very early to beat the queue at the watering hole, which is kilometers away. The water was salty, says Chesire, but since receiving the new taps, she says, life has become so much easier. World Vision Kenya and the Nakuru County Government funded the wells, giving residents access to clean drinking water, but also using a high-tech solution to prevent waste. Villagers use cards fitted with microchips and preloaded with money to dispense and pay for the water, helping to fund the cost of drilling wells. Charles Kimutai is a Chepkululu Water Project chairman. He says the card system has been very helpful since he no longer has to chase people down to get them to pay their water bill. The project has brought much-needed water closer to home and extra income for locals, like mother of two, Brenda Chemgetich. She says she is now growing vegetables in her backyard, which she also sells. It has helped her sustain a comfortable livelihood, says Chemgetich. Nakuru Governor Lee Kinyanjui called on residents of Solai to take advantage of the new water access to grow and sell produce.
As we move forward, we'll want to get the water not just in the water kiosks, but even closer to their homes and actually into their homes eventually.
Project manager for World Vision Kenya, John Mwaura, says they have built 11 boreholes and water dispensing machines in the area since December 2018.
Since we entered, life has changed. Since, as per evaluation report that we did, we entered when the access to water was at 37%. And to date, we have gone to 54%. So we can say this is an achievement, and all this achievement is because of the projects that World Vision is doing. And we hope to go far with the partnership that we are going to do with the government.
For the villagers of Solai, the access to clean, safe drinking water has literally taken a load off their backs. Maggie Njuki for VOA News, Nakuru County.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all others, please stay tuned for the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
VOAAfrica.com.
On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.
Stand up!